man, it's 6 p.m., and that means it's time for the Bullpen, starring the one and only Joe George.
Thanks, Joe.
Listen and be fascinated as the longtime producer becomes untethered by lesser talent and can truly talk sports the way he was meant to, with no reins or restrictions, with stellar takes and perfect diction.
I'm assistant regional manager. I should know first.
Assistant to the regional manager.
Yeah, okay.
Now, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen with Joe George.
Welcome into the Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. We got Brian McDonald behind the glass producing the show, as most of the time usually is back there for me. On Twitter at Sack by BMAC. We got a lot of stuff to get into today. We're going to talk about the Texans, where they stand amongst the rest of the NFL, power rankings, playoffs, Super Bowl. No, not this year. But how far can they go? Like, last night was an interesting game, and kind of the fallout from that is where we're going to take this show to start. We'll talk about the Astros. We got reports that are really interesting about the Astros pursuing a number one starter. The Rockets on a three-game losing streak. Jalen Green got benched. I'm going to be off tomorrow, so we're going to do a Thanksgiving draft at the end of the show. I almost consider just fully bit-stealing from the weekend bullpen, which you'll hear most Saturdays from 12 to 2, and doing a Mount Rushmore plus one, but I felt like that was too much gimmick.
We might have come to blows over that
too
one.
Too much gimmick infringement, so we're just going to do a draft. We're going to do five different categories, snake draft style. I'm going to even let BMAC decide if he wants to go first or second. So we got a lot to get into today. But last night's game between the Chiefs and the Eagles was interesting because it's very clear that the Kansas City Chiefs and that defense, it's the best defense Patrick Mahomes has ever had since he's been there. His talent on offense is probably the worst. Now, I love Pacheco. I love Travis Kelce. But the wide receivers let him down once again in last night's game. And it's tough because, like, you know there's more. So when you look at the AFC as a whole, I think it's still very clear that they are at the top. The NFC is much more interesting to me right now because I think there are multiple teams that I would feel have a better chance to win a Super Bowl before anyone else in the AFC. You know, we kind of talked about this on the Bs a little bit, but if we did a draft of teams that are going to win the Super Bowl this year, you have, I think it's the Eagles, the 49ers, the Chiefs are the first three selections for pretty much everyone. My question is, like, how far do you get into the NFC now before you want to take another AFC team? I don't feel that the Baltimore Ravens are some big-time Super Bowl contender, that the Buffalo Bills, they're not even in the playoffs right now if the season ended today. I definitely don't view the Browns that way. It is too early, probably, to view the Houston Texans that way. And you can make the argument for the Dolphins, but they keep losing to good teams, and honestly, they end up losing pretty badly. So I look at the AFC and I just say it's not the gauntlet that we thought it was going to be. And when you look at power rankings across, whether it's CBS, ESPN, Fox Sports, and you look at the top 10, a majority of the time, the Houston Texans are now in that category. That most people believe that when you talk about the 10 best teams in the NFL, they are including the Houston Texans. The lowest I've found them is 12th, which is baffling to me. The most surprising thing that people are doing in these power rankings is putting the Cleveland Browns. I know they have a great defense, but putting the Cleveland Browns ahead of the Houston Texans, they have no quarterback play. And there is just no way that you can convince me that the Cleveland Browns in any version of a power rankings should be ahead of the Houston Texans. So if I go through the list and I make my own, I'm going to have the Texans as currently 8th on my list. I'm going to have the Eagles. This is no particular order. The Eagles, the Lions, the Cowboys, the Chiefs, the 49ers, the Dolphins, the Ravens as my top 7. And then 8 and 9 would be Jacksonville, or it would be Houston and then Jacksonville. And right now, Jacksonville, even though they're in first place, they have a better record at this very moment, the Houston Texans. It does not matter to me because almost like the college football playoff, the Texans have the head-to-head. So that's where I view the Houston Texans right now as the 8th best team in the NFL. Now, does that mean they're a Super Bowl contender this year? Absolutely not. But if there was a year to make a special run and to do something surprising, I think this is it. Because Baltimore, they've still struggled to pass the ball deep down the field with Lamar. The wide receiver talent's not great. Their running game has been a mixed bag. And I think you can say the same thing about the Kansas City Chiefs. The difference there is that they have Patrick Mahomes. So if there's going to be a special run this year, I compared it earlier to what Jacksonville did in 2017. They went 10-6 after three wins the previous year, and they won two playoff games. They beat the Buffalo Bills 10-3. The following week, they beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 45-42, and then eventually lost to the New England Patriots in the AFC title game. If there's ever a year for there to be a miraculous story in the NFL and to have one of the all-time turnarounds for the Houston Texans, I think it's this year.
Yeah, it's funny. You were going over that list, and I was trying to think of it from a Vegas perspective. Like, on a neutral field, how many of these teams would be ranked ahead of the or be favorited over the Houston Texans on a neutral field by Vegas? And I definitely agree with the seven you listed out, and I was trying to think, is there anyone else on this list that neutral field would be favorited by Vegas? And I think the only one would be the Bills. I think the Bills on a neutral field, Vegas would still make them the money line favorite. Possibly Jacksonville, but I don't think that to be true. And that's pretty much end of the list. I mean, maybe you could have a conversation about the Seahawks, but they just lost to the Rams.
Seahawks are not on that list.
I think at worst, you had them at eighth, right?
Yeah.
I think at worst you maybe moved them down to nine, but I agree that's pretty much the floor.
And Jacksonville, I think, where if you went the neutral site thing and kind of took this from more the college football perspective than the NFL, because obviously the Jags and Texas, unless they played in Europe, would never play on a neutral site. I think it'd be a pick'em. Like, I think that's kind of where you would see that matchup going into a game if they played this week on a neutral site. I would expect that game to be a pick'em, maybe a point at most for whoever, you know, just has the better record. But because the Texans have the head-to-head right now with Jacksonville, I would still put them in front of them at this time.
I would too. They won the game on the field in Jacksonville, so I don't think, like, if I were making the line, I would make the Texans a favorite, and I would agree with you. I would have them there at eight, although I would listen to the argument for the Bills maybe dropping them down to nine. But I think that goes into what you're talking about with a magical run, especially with the disparity between the AFC and NFC, which is fascinating, because before the season started, Joe, one of the conversations we were having on this show and other shows was the quarterback disparity between the NFC and AFC. It's like, oh my God, the AFC is 7-8 quarterbacks deep with like these great names, and the NFC only has Jalen Hurts. But right now, as I'm looking at these power rankings and thinking about who I would take in these neutral site scenarios for a Super Bowl, the only team from the AFC that I would lock in as being able to win a Super Bowl are the Chiefs. And I'm kind of at the point now where if the Chiefs don't win the Super Bowl champion's coming from the NFC.
Yep, that's where, and I agree with you. And even if that's Detroit, Dallas, Philly, San Francisco, I think those four teams, if for some reason it's not Kansas City, can win the Super Bowl. And there still should be a belief that Kansas City, because it's Patrick Mahomes, it's Andy Reid. But like, you cannot ignore the fact that in their last three games, the Kansas City Chiefs have scored 0 points in the second half. And I know that, you know, over the course of the last couple of years, it was the water was kind of muddy about who had really the play calling, the control of what the offense was with Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy. But I'm telling you, this isn't the first time I've seen a team that has high expectations for offense not know how to execute properly, and Matt Nagy is around that team. Like, I'm not saying this is what it was with the Bears, but Matt Nagy is the coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs, and it does feel like that this team this year has taken a major step back. So if there was ever going to be a year for a miraculous run for the Houston Texans to do something that really has never been done, I went back all the way to 2002, and what I tried to find was all the teams that had three wins or less and then made the playoffs to see what kind of success they had. There were three teams. Now, I guess I missed one. Dre mentioned this earlier. Jacksonville from last year going from the first pick. I almost exclude them because of the whole Urban Meyer thing, but we'll count them. So you have four teams since 2002 that were a top pick in the draft, four wins or less, that made the playoffs and won the game. You have the Jacksonville Jaguars from last year, the Jacksonville Jaguars from 2016-17. You have the New Orleans Saints in 2005. Now, they don't count, in my opinion. They went 3-13 to 10-6. That was the year they brought in Sean Payton and Drew Brees. And then you have the 49ers, who in 2018 went from 4-12 to 13-3 and lost in the Super Bowl. But that was Kyle Shanahan's third year. That was the first year Jimmy Garoppolo was healthy.
Yeah, so two of those scenarios, and really actually three of those scenarios, the only one that would not fall into this category would be the 2016-17 Jaguars, are basically bringing in new quarterbacks and completely changing the situation from which they were a bottom-feeding team the year before. You mentioned the Saints adding Drew Brees. The 49ers adding Jimmy Garoppolo completely changes that situation. Had they had those guys, they wouldn't have been in the bottom the year before. And I know that technically Jaguars last year didn't add Trevor Lawrence, but they basically added Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Because under Urban Meyer, he was a complete train wreck. I think through like 10 touchdown passes, he was at Kenny Pickett levels of production under Urban Meyer. So it feels like they added a first-round quarterback going into last season.
Yeah, it's just if there was ever a year, this is it. And it's also, you know, part of it is what we talked about yesterday about, you know, the future of the Houston Texans, that they haven't played their best football yet. There is something still left to be had in what they can be. Dr. Dre countered right away with, you know, mentioning the Chiefs in the second half and not scoring. Well, the Texans just did the same thing, but the Chiefs have done it 3 weeks in a row, and I'm not trying to go apples and apples to apples here with these two teams, but the Texans have left a lot on the table offensively throughout this year, and there's a lot of good football to be made and be played for this team, and there's just a lot of mediocrity in the AFC that, frankly, I don't know if it was overhyped or teams' windows have just closed so fast like I think the Bills and the Chargers have, at least with their current coaches and core. So we'll see what happens. But last night's game just, it got me thinking that the AFC is just not what we thought it was going to be this year. I would still expect the Chiefs. I would still predict the Chiefs today now that the Bengals are out of the conversation to go to the Super Bowl and represent the AFC. But who they beat in the AFC title game, I think there's a lot of questions, and I don't think it is absolutely insane to say that the Houston Texans can make a run at it this upcoming playoff stretch, because it's wide open. But speaking of teams that have real playoff success but have a lot of questions, that's the Houston Astros. John Heyman over the weekend had a report that the Houston Astros are in the mix for and prioritizing a number one starter. How and who? We hit on that next here on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. Aya Kane Powder.
Marriage. Marriage is what brings us together today.
Welcome back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios. This is a piece of audio known in the business as a rejoin.
Rejoin.
It's fertile ground to crack jokes at the host's expense. But I have nothing bad to say about this dude. It's the guy with the reversible name, Joe George, live in the bullpen.
It's the bullpen here, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Quickly here before we get into some Astro stuff and a report coming from John Heyman. 9845 Texan says, which team has played their best football this year? I think it's very clear. It's the Philadelphia Eagles are number one on my list. And because of a couple bad games from Brock Purdy, I'm going to put number two on there as the Detroit Lions, as the teams that have played their best football this season. Because even like this weekend for Detroit, when things were going very bad, they found a way to win. And I kind of want to include Dallas in there.
Yeah, Dallas has played their best football. I mean, they've got what? How many 20-plus point blowouts do they have?
Yeah, I'm trying to go back to their losses and see.
Oh, well, they lost at the Cardinals.
Yeah.
So that's a bad one.
Yeah, they did.
That was that's the Cardinals' only win, I believe.
And they lost to Jacksonville in week one, and they lost to the Cowboys. I mean, they lost to the Seahawks. But besides that, they beat the Giants 40-0. They beat the Jets 30-10. Yes, they lost to the Cardinals, but then they just went on this tear. Now, they got smoked by the 49ers. They lost 42-10 to the 49ers. Yeah. So maybe they can't be in this category.
Well, But that's just, I think, if we're breaking down the contenders in tiers, you know, like this is a fantasy football ranking, I think that just shows us that, you know, the Eagles and the 49ers, that top tier, and then the Cowboys are that next step down.
Yeah.
I don't think they're as bad as what we saw in that game against the 49ers. I mean, I still would pick the 49ers to win in a rematch, and I'd probably pick them to win by more than one score, but I don't think it's going to be like it was early in the year.
Yeah, it's going to be – I think the Eagles is probably the correct answer for me of just who's playing their best football this season. Pretty look, they're 9-1. They even when things don't go great for them, like they find a way to get it done. I'm a little over people complaining about the tush push. It's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. People tried to stop it, or the competition committee tried to stop it, but it didn't go through. I think you just have to stop complaining about it. Honestly, at this point, like
what's the argument? Oh, it works too well?
Because it only works for them.
Yeah, it's stupid.
It's like, find a way to stop it. Like, there is an answer for everything. There is always an answer for something. Like, you have to find a way to get a solution to it. On a other side note, watching Jalen Carter dive underneath the Chiefs center's legs last night trying to catch the spike from Mahomes is honestly one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And I kind of wish people did it more often. That would get outlawed faster than the tush push, though, for the record, because they would view that play as something that would potentially damage the center's knees, and they would try to protect him. And with that, too, and because we're going to take Eric here in just a second, the whole Tom Brady thing that went out yesterday about how the play in the NFL is awful and it's not good, and part of that is the refs and all the rules that they've put in, and he used like Rodney Harrison as an example of things, and Rodney Lott as guys that, you know, they couldn't play in today's league. I agree with Tom Brady that the play in the NFL is down, but the idea that Tom Brady is now publicly trying to shame the NFL because of the way defenders can't hit people is absolutely hilarious.
There is literally a Tom Brady rule.
Like, most of these rules are in place. I saw Arian Foster tweet this. Most of these rules are in place because of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning.
Yeah, like, 100%. I mean, Bernard Pollard going low on Tom Brady is why guys can no longer go low. That was 2008, I think, whatever yes. year he lost a complete, he tore his ACL in game one. Yeah, I mean, most rules that are coming into the league are to protect quarterbacks. They're based upon an injury that happened to a quarterback and trying to prevent it from happening again. You have to go high. You can't go, obviously you can't go high on anybody, but that was a rule they put in the quarterback. You can't even touch the quarterback in the helmet as you're going by him, right? It's not even just like lowering your helmet like you would on a defenseless receiver. You can't even, you know, touch the quarterback in the head. We saw the penalty that I think Will Anderson got flagged for in the yep. game against Joe Burrow, where he hit him in the helmet with his hands. You can't do that. You can't go low. You can't land with your full body weight on the quarterback.
Exactly.
Basically, like, you can't tackle him. I mean, spare me. All these rules are to protect you guys.
Yeah, and that's why I just look. Now, there are a lot of – this isn't the first time we've seen things like this happen. You know, it is funny when people get removed from their job, how much their tone changes. Like, I think it is hilarious listening to Theo Epstein talk about how he basically admitting that he basically helped ruin baseball, and now he works for the commissioner's office to help try to fix it because they went too deep, too far with analytics in the game, and like now they're trying to course correct because they realized they made their sport unwatchable. I think there is a path to that for the NFL where like they have to find some sort of solution. They're never going to see, you know, the drop in ratings that Major League Baseball saw. 30 million people watched Monday Night Football last night, the most since it was a Cowboys-Packers game in 1996. So, like, the ratings are still going to be incredible, but they have made the game kind of unwatchable.
There is a fine line, obviously, because it's a violent sport where injuries can be, you know, life-altering and not just career-altering. But there is a fine line to walk between player safety and making the game a entertaining TV product to watch. Like, when you obviously seen the same reactions I do on Twitter. People don't want a lot of these flags that are being thrown in the field. Now, some of that is obviously team bias and it's going against your team, but there is a way to protect players with still keeping the physicality in the game that fans like and fans tune in for.
Yeah, all right. We'll get out to the phones here quickly. First, just quick update. College football playoff rankings are officially out. Top four teams right now are Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and Washington. So I think the committee got it right by not including Florida State, because without Travis, without Jordan Travis, like, I just don't think they should be included. Now, we will see. Obviously, Ohio State, Michigan has to plan out. I hate to say, like, I wish people will lose, because I just don't want to deal with the controversy. I'm rooting for Louisville and Florida very heavily to defeat Florida State the next 2 weeks to avoid any of this controversy that's going to be there.
Yeah, because I don't know if they actually avoided putting Florida State in there regardless, because if Ohio State, when Ohio State and our Michigan lose, that team, Florida State steps right in.
Dude, I think Oregon, if Oregon wins the Pac-12, I think that, like, you should have Oregon or Texas in before you have Florida State or Michigan and Ohio State. I don't think Michigan and Ohio State have played good enough this year and have played enough competition to where both those teams deserve to be in the college football playoff if one of them has a loss. They're not going to play in a conference championship game. I just don't think the Big Ten is what it's supposed to be. Virginia Buttonweed says they aren't supposed to consider injury. I don't know what they're supposed to consider. They're supposed to, you know, consider conferences and all these things, but then all they say is all they care about is taking the four best teams. And you cannot be, if that's what they say every single year, is getting the four best teams, then you cannot view a quarterback missing time and saying, we're going to still take this team. You are going to have a two-game sample size with Jordan Travis, without Jordan Travis for Florida State. If you want the four best teams, I don't know how they're part of the mix, even if they win the ACC championship. Let's go out to the phone, 713-780-3776. Talk to Eric in Clear Lake. Eric, what's going on?
Hey, guys. I just wanted to talk about, the 2008 Giants. They beat the undefeated Patriots. It's just who's hitting their stride at the perfect time during the playoff run. And that's why I think the Cowboys might make it to the Super Bowl. And also, Tom Brady talking about the league. He benefited the most from the absurd tuck rule call. I'll hang up a listen. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Eric. Yeah, look, we know that everything and anything is possible when you get to the NFL playoffs. Like, the idea that...
Wait, are you saying on any given Sunday?
On any given Sunday. I should have got the music ready for that one. Like, the Detroit Lions can go to the Super Bowl this year. Sounds crazy. But the Lions can go to the Super Bowl. The Texans could go to the Super Bowl this year, because all you are is an injury away from getting a good break. You know, if you get to the AFC title game and Mahomes rolls his ankle in the first quarter, like I don't know what happened last year, and Chad Henne had to come in and sustain drives until Mahomes got back on the field, anything is possible.
Yeah, how many people have the Diamondbacks making the World Series?
Exactly. Like, we've seen now, it definitely feels more common in baseball, where, like, you get these miraculous runs.
In baseball, though, you have to win multiple. I mean, yeah. Think about, we're talking about how one lucky break can make you. I mean, in football, you're talking about, what, at most 3 wins to get you to the Super Bowl, whereas in some baseball series, 3 wins doesn't get you out of the round.
Yeah.
So I think it's even more severe in football, you're talking about.
It definitely is. And that's why I think I'm more excited about this year in the NFL playoffs than I have been in a while, because it reminds me of like what we're seeing now in college football. It's kind of a bummer, and this is the last year of the 4-team playoff, but it's exciting at the same time. You have all these teams that are deserving to be in the college football playoff, and there's going to be big-time arguments. You know, like, if Alabama wins the SEC title game, they have to be in. But, like, I don't know how you put Texas in above Georgia. But Texas beat Alabama, so, like, they should probably be in. You have Florida State, who is now missing their quarterback. The college football playoff, I think I'm fascinated by what's going to happen with the 12-team playoff, because I want to go back 2 years. Notre Dame, they're like 2 losses away. They are, like, number 6 in the country. And it's a very, like, conceivable thing that Notre Dame finds its way into the college football playoff 2 years ago. But Brian Kelly left. Brian Kelly had already taken the LSU job before the conference title games, and he was gone. And, like, it was being said then, how do you view Notre Dame with Marcus Freeman as an interim coach at the time going into the playoffs? It is going to happen where a team is going to qualify or be close to qualifying for the 12-team playoff next year and the year after, and their coach might be gone.
Yeah, it's certainly more possible than the 4-team playoff, because usually the teams in the 4-team playoff, those coaches are already at their dream job, so you don't have to really worry about that. But, like, I believe Tulane would be in the playoff from the latest like mock bracket that
however the new thing works.
Yeah, exactly. So you could certainly see a situation where the Tulane head coach, even though he's projected to get in the playoffs, would be using that performance to catapult himself to a more prime time level job. So you could certainly, I think, with the 12-team playoff, that's certainly more possible. But it will be nice because all these arguments we're having about the Michigan Ohio State loser, the Alabama Georgia loser, what happens with Texas, what happens with Florida State, none of that matters once we get to the 12-team playoff.
Well, I mean, it's just going to change.
No, well, see.
Because we're going to be talking about Ole Miss at 12.
No,
versus
no.
Oklahoma, LSU, and Arizona.
No, see, I that's fine. You're right. The conversation will exist, but this maybe that kind of triggered me because this goes back to long time ago when we still used to have to deal with the BCS, where the proponents for the keeping the BCS and keeping the bowls and not going to the playoff format, it's like, well, you know, if we gave you a 4-team playoff, you would complain about 5. Yes, sure. But complaining about, you know, number 13 and 14 is way more tolerable than complaining about a 12-1 Texas getting left out.
Yeah, and look, and this is going to happen, okay? If the 12-team playoff happened this year, I'll play out this scenario very quickly here before we go to break and talk some Stros with you guys. The 12-team playoff exists this year. Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin are the 12 seed at this moment. Let's just say that. Lane Kiffin gets offered the job at Texas A&M. Are you putting in Ole Miss without Lane Kiffin, or are you putting in Oklahoma? I'm putting in Oklahoma because your head coach is gone. Like, you've got to change something.
I'm going to take some heat for this, maybe, but is A&M a better job?
That's a great question.
Is it really?
I think they would say yes.
Certainly the recruiting, certainly the budget is better at A&M. Certainly the recruiting base is better at A&M. I'll give A&M a check mark on that. But I think when you factor in what are at times unreasonable expectations compared to what the reality is in the conference you're in, I think Ole Miss might be a better job.
I think, I definitely think there's
You can still recruit well. You still have tons of money, but you don't have the insane expectations.
I think Ole Miss, like making the college football playoff once every 3 years and maybe winning a game, is going to be good enough for them to never have to worry about Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly,
they'll probably never have a better coach than Lane Kiffin. I love Lane Kiffin. I think he is a phenomenal coach. He's just a weird character that people don't always necessarily love and necessarily agree with. All right, we'll talk some Stros here. It is the offseason. We're seeing some signings slowly start to happen. Some very bad starting pitchers get $10, $12 million. But John Heyman says the Astros are prioritizing a number one starter. What does that mean? We do it next year on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Planted unicorn hay.
Give it up for feathers. Ooh, Cadillac and Tom Cruise.
Deep inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios, there is a bullpen. And in that bullpen is the brilliant mind of Joe George. Call him now and challenge him in a battle of wits.
All right, we're going to do, because I'm going to be off tomorrow, we're going to do a Thanksgiving draft. We're going to do 5 different categories, no particular order. You'll be able to do just whatever you think is your strength, your number one pick. You can go in that order. We're going to do 2 Houston sports things to be thankful for. We'll just phrase it this way. It can't be from the same team. We're going to do best side dish, worst Thanksgiving tradition, and best dessert. Those are going to be the categories. We're going to do that in our final segment of the show. But John Heyman reported that the Astros are prioritizing a number one starter. They included a bunch of teams, and then they connected to this guy that they just posted who just got posted from Japan. Not saying the Astros are in connection to him, but just that the Astros are prioritizing a number one starter this offseason. And I immediately started thinking, how do you add a number one starter if you're the Houston Astros? And what does that mean about what Dana Brown thinks of this team? I do not believe that they are going to be in the mix for Blake Snell. Now, you could use, like, if you want to use Aaron Nola as kind of a baseline, he got 7 years, 172 from the Phillies to stay there. My guess is that's a little bit of a hometown discount. I feel like he might have gotten
more. Gets more than that.
Yeah, I think Snell does too. Look, I mean, how many guys have won a Cy Young in both the American League and the National League? He's one of them. Like, he had a very good season.
There were some
year.
Bad times in between, but still.
Yes. So I think Blake Snell gets more than that. And I think Jim Crane is going to be willing to go into the luxury tax if it makes sense. And if it makes sense means not long term. I think he is will be willing to go into the luxury tax if he's only locked into it for like a year or 2 years. Now, part of that year, and the reason why you can add a guy now for the long term if the contract is there, is because Alex Bregman's coming off the books. $30 million is coming off the books after this upcoming season. So really, you could add a starter, and then when Bregman's contract goes away, you could fall back underneath the luxury tax. But I just do not foresee the Astros being in the mix for Shohei, for Blake Snell, but also they're not going to be in the mix for Shohei Ohtani.
No, of course not. Because
we're talking about pitching help. We're not talking about a DH. We're talking about a pitcher. Shohei Ohtani is not a pitcher for 2024. He is not going to throw off the mound again until 2025. They're not in that mix. You can dream. You can make. You can put him in an Ohtani jersey. Ohtani in an Astros jersey.
It's not going to happen. I mean, especially since he's a DH.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, what are you going to do? Have Yordan play, you know, every game in left field? I mean, I think for the most part, even though we're concerned about him getting hurt because he has really awkward slides and he hurts mysterious hands, he doesn't know which hand it is. But we're okay with him playing left field at Minute Maid Park because of the short porch, because of the Crawford box, the tall wall where he can play things off the wall. He's not having to run as deep. But when he's on the road playing some of these massive outfields, no one wants to play Yordan out there. I mean, both because of his liabilities as a defensive player and because of injury concerns. But if you sign Shohei, he's playing every game in left field. Shohei is not.
Unless Shohei's playing the left. So that's why the Shohei
coming off Tommy John, he's not.
If you want Shohei Ohtani to be a Houston Astro, go buy the newest version of MLB The Show and sign him there. Because, like, that is the only realistic way.
I have too.
And look, having Shohei Ohtani back-to-back with Yordan Alvarez in a video game is a lot of fun. And with Kyle Tucker mixed in there, too, it's a great time. I can assure you that. So if the Astros are going to add a number one starter this offseason, you have to do a trade. And if you're going to do this, you should be going for the biggest names possible, which would be Shane Bieber, Dylan Cease, Corbin Burns, or Tyler Glasnow. Those would be the four guys that it's being well reported that all four of those players are available right now for any team. Tyler Glasnow is owed $25 million. I saw more stuff from the MLB Network today that the Rays definitely want to get rid of him. Corbin Burns is not happy about Milwaukee. Same thing for Dylan Cease. Both the White Sox and the Brewers have made it clear through leaks that they're listening on everyone. Now, similar to Tyler Glasnow, the Cleveland Guardians are an organization that typically trades a player before they walk for free. They've done this multiple times with starting pitchers in the past. So the idea that Bieber could be traded, I think, is totally on the table. So if you're the Astros, that's how you get a number one starter. The question is, what are you willing to do to make that happen? And the first name when we talked about this on the Killer Bees I threw out there was Hunter Brown. Now, I don't want to trade Hunter Brown because I think you need him for the long term, but he still is a question mark. He still does get you the most in return. And frankly, I think you have to add zero to any of these deals for Hunter Brown. In fact, if I'm the Houston Astros and the Chicago White Sox call me and say, we want to do Dylan Cease for Hunter Brown straight up, I'm saying, what else are you giving me? Because Dylan Cease is going to walk in 2 years. You're going to have Hunter Brown for the next five. And I know there's a big gap in like quality of pitcher there, but I'm not just giving Hunter Brown away for free. The next guy I would add to that list, or of who would you be willing to trade, it opens up another problem. But like, would you trade Jeremy Peña?
Oh, absolutely.
I think the answer is yes.
I mean, look, it feels like I'm having the same conversation I did in 2006 about Adam Everett. It's like, oh, well, his defensive run saved or whatever. I don't care if his slugging is like low 400s or sometimes below 400. If he's barely hitting over the Mendoza line, I don't care what his glove is. I mean, yeah. You can find somebody with a decently competent glove to fill in that spot. I definitely would include. I wouldn't be opposed to including Hunter Brown in the conversation, but I think the only names of the four that you brought up that I'd be willing to throw him in for would be with Corbin Burns, just because, I mean, it feels like he'd walk in here and possibly win a Cy Young right away. And then Dylan Cease, because among those four names, he's the only one with 2 years of team control left. With Bieber, especially with his declining velocity, and Tyler Glasnow's injury history, and them both only having 1 year left of team control, I think I'd be out on that. As far as including Hunter Brown, I'd have to have another conversation are they willing to take other things, which they're probably not. But Cease and Corbin Burns I'd be in on.
Yeah, I think this is feasible for the Astros. And
if you're including Hunter Brown, if you're not including Hunter Brown, I mean, they gave up their two best prospects to bring Justin Verlander back.
But there are other guys in the system that you can attach to.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Geddie, I guess.
You can attach those guys to a trade with Pena or with Hunter Brown to make it work.
Now, if Hunter Brown's what I'm saying is I don't see a way where they can make a trade for any of these four guys without including Hunter Brown.
It just depends on how quickly they get in these conversations and what the market is for them. Because there are so many guys that could be on the market, it could dilute it a little bit. Ideally, if I was to say I want this guy to be a Houston Astros next year, I am calling the Tampa Bay Rays, because I think that they are what they do so consistently is trade a player, fill a gap. They have pitching constantly. Their biggest gap, Jeremy Pena solves. They signed Wander Franco to a massive contract, and he's likely never going to play baseball again.
Yeah, but does Pena fill the gap? I mean, Pena's not the player Wander Franco was.
I mean, he hit like 280 the second half of the season. I know he hit no home runs.
When was the last time he hit a home run?
July.
We were young men.
July. But I still believe in Jeremy Pena. I still believe that he is a very good player. I don't believe he is the superstar that people – I never believed that he was a superstar people wanted to bill him as when he won the World Series MVP. He had a great run. It was incredible. But I would view trading Jeremy Pena as the piece that I would want to move to acquire one of these. And because when you talk about names and risk and reward, the biggest name and that you can bring in that is super cheap, major, major reward is I'm walking into my clubhouse and I'm picking up my phone. I'm calling Jose Abreu and saying, tell me about Tim Anderson. Tell me about who this guy is. And if it was the White Sox problem or if it was a Tim Anderson problem, tell me the truth, because I think it was a White Sox problem. But this is a guy who 2 years ago hit 300.
He also had a massive power outage.
He did.
His power dropped off just dropped off the face of the earth.
But who else did?
Yeah, Jose Abreu.
Because the Chicago White Sox are a terrible organization, and they told the two best hitters in their lineup to stop trying to hit home runs and hit doubles. I'm just saying,
it's an interesting conversation. I think, obviously, what we found out, and I think this, honestly, this went back to last season, but he didn't say anything because he was obviously looking for another contract. But I think Jose Abreu was even hurt last year. And
agreed.
we just never found that out. Now, I don't know if Tim Anderson has been hurt this whole time, but it is concerning.
Does have a glass jaw.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Jose Ramirez tested that for sure.
Yes, that's very true.
I'm fine with his glove. He's hit for a nice average in the past, but I'm just afraid about that power dropping off. I mean, not just dropping off. It dropped off to zero.
So did Jeremy Pena.
Yeah.
So you're telling me I could have Jeremy Pena and no starting pitcher, or I could trade away Jeremy Pena and some other prospects for Tyler Glasnow and sign Tim Anderson. I think you take the option of trading away Pena. You take the risk on Anderson, and that's what you do next year.
Are you saying Pena and Brown for Cease and Anderson?
Well, now I know that Bert Steele. I got a history lesson on Bert Steele over the weekend. I had to text people from 790 and 610 and be like, explain it to me like I'm an idiot. Who Bert Steele is. That's when I learned he said that at 5:45 on Tuesday, Carmelo Anthony will be a Houston Rocket.
Oh, right, yeah.
He put out this crazy tweet, though. He said that McCormick or Keady. Who else was it? Hunter Brown and like two other guys need to get their winter jackets ready because they're going to Chicago, which the only trade that that would ever happen for would be for Robert and Cease. Now, I know that there are other people who are putting that out there, that the Houston Astros are trying to get Robert and Cease. I'm going to go 1%. Otani's 0%. Robert and Cease, 1%.
If we're living in the fantasy world where this happens, because I agree with you, I can't see it happening. Is Robert playing center field and moving Chaz to left?
Oh, yeah. I'm good with that. Robert will run into the wall if you put him in.
Yeah, I was just curious if people would want him in center. I mean, obviously he can play center. He played it for the White Sox, but I think most everyone's been happy with Chaz in center. So I wondered if the Astros maybe put him Robert in left and keep Chaz in center, or if they would make the flip.
And the other thing, and to kind of wrap this up before we end the show in the next segment, the last thing I want to say about this though is that I think what's important about this report, besides just the fact that the Astros are prioritizing at number one, and it's fun to speculate who they could get, what they could give up, I do think it kind of tells you a little bit about the state of the franchise and how their new general manager views it. I think they view Justin Verlander in the way they should, as an aging superstar, that any day we could wake up and he could fall off a cliff. And the idea that you're going to get 2 years of Justin Verlander at this level that we got at the second half of the season is probably unrealistic. And I think it goes into the fact that this team and Dana Brown probably do not view Framber Valdez as an ace, and that going forward to win a World Series in the next 2 years, that they need to add someone else. Because if you view Framber as an ace and you view Justin Verlander as an ace, why do you need another number one starter? So I think it's very clear where this team and where Dana
because
Brown
you have views to win with, because you have to win with pitching because of the batter's eye.
Well, the batter's eye is getting fixed, B-Mac.
They say that. We don't know because the batter's eye, I think you and I agree on this, was never a problem. That was not the issue.
I'm sorry, I know.
We're up against it, and I brought batter eye into the conversation. That's on me.
I asked someone that works on the team that, like, is not like a source, but like, how much conversation was this really there? And they said that there are players that were constantly complaining about the batter's eye when they face tall lefties. Now, the rest of the season when they're facing righties, I don't know the answer. Why it only affected the Astros, I think it's an excuse. But Michael Schwab reported, and like, I think he's right, the batter's eye is going to look completely different next year because they are going to appease whatever issues that existed. They're going to say, you guys can't use this as an excuse anymore. So whatever that means, we're going to find out. I can't wait to see what the new batter's eye looks like at Minute Maid Park in 2024. The most important thing that we've got to talk about. Also important, Thanksgiving. What are we thankful for? Best side dishes, worst traditions, best dessert. We do it next on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. We keep getting away with it.
I want the ball. Give me the ball.
What do you do after a full day's work of producing and corralling all of the individual conflicting personalities at ESPN 97.5? Well, if you're Jumpin' Joe George, you do another hour of sports talk. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen.
All right, final segment of the Bullpen here at ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George, Brian McDonald here with you. We'll have Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis coming up next. I will be out tomorrow, taking a vacation day before the holidays, before Thanksgiving. Hopefully you all enjoy yours and your families are tolerable, because my family's great, so I'm not worried about that. But we're going to do a draft here. Myself and Brian, we're going to go snake style. We have five categories. Well, four categories. One of them we're going to double up. Houston sports things to be thankful for, or we are thankful for. Best side dish, worst Thanksgiving tradition, best dessert. We'll go 1 through 5. Snake, any order you want. Just got to take one of each. I'm going first. I'm CJ Stroud, number one pick. I'm thankful for CJ Stroud.
That's the number one pick for sure.
Gotta be number one.
The reason I was okay with you going one, because I felt like there was a clear 1B in this situation. And if you didn't take it, I was basically, there was two at the top, and I was fine with either one you gave me.
D'Amico
Ryans is what I'm thankful for. And so I felt good about not having the second pick, because then it gave me the chance to come back with my second pick and say the other thing in Houston sports that I'm thankful for is Jose Altuve. I thought that was the clear, because we had to take one Texan, or at least we couldn't take two Texans, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, obviously Tank Dell will be in the conversation as well, but if we're talking about non-Texan things in Houston sports that we're thankful for, clearly it's Jose Altuve.
Okay, well, since we don't have to go any order now, I'm going to wait.
Yeah, you might as well wait, because I can't take another thing I'm thankful for.
Worst Thanksgiving tradition, forcing bad football teams on Thanksgiving Day. Like, I the Lions are good this year, so it's fine. But, like, we watched, like, the 0-16 Lions play on Thanksgiving every year. So, like, forcing the bad football teams on Thanksgiving is a terrible tradition. I do not think you have to have the Lions and the Cowboys playing every single week. Was that one of yours?
I might need a clarification.
Why?
No. You could take what you take. I'm just saying, if I could still take what I was planning to
take. We'll see.
I'll save it for when we get there.
Best side dish. I'm gonna go with the mashed potatoes. I'm not gonna.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you took that. You can have the mashed potatoes. You can have that all day long.
All right.
So I'll go ahead and take. I guess I'm taking my top dessert, because that's the only one that hasn't been picked from yet. And I'm going to go, look, this may be controversial. Not everyone likes it. I think Joel has been on record.
He
doesn't like this. But pecan pie is my favorite Thanksgiving dessert. I will have that before I have anything else. Certainly, I will have it before pumpkin pie. Now, there might be some better desserts that some families mix in, but as far as the traditional things that basically every Thanksgiving table has, I will take pecan pie. And then since you already take your side dish, I will go with what my favorite side dish is, and that is you can call it stuffing, you can call it dressing, but I will take whatever that title that you give to that side dish.
Stuffing/dressing.
Yeah, stuffing/dressing. I will take that as my side dish.
That makes sense. I think that's a good call. I love mashed potatoes, even though you can have them year-round. They are still my go-to.
I can't remember if you were into this conversation. I know Joel was. This might have been a day you're out. My problem with mashed potatoes, specifically with a Thanksgiving setting, is it feels like the mashed potatoes, as soon as they've been sitting out for like 30 seconds, the drop-off for that, and the reheat, there's like no reheatability to me to mashed potatoes.
I think that is
something I can enjoy for several days.
That's a good take. All right, I'm going to go best dessert for my next one. I'm gonna ditch the pumpkin pie, and I'm gonna go apple pie.
That's a good call.
I like pumpkin pie, but it's not my favorite.
There's HEB sells an apple walnut pie.
Mm.
That's fantastic.
Of all the pumpkin stuff, I like my pumpkin spice latte a lot more than I like my pumpkin pie. And then my last Houston sports thing to be thankful for, I wanted to go super generic, but you took D'Amico Ryans. I was just gonna say competent coaching, but I feel like you took D'Amico, so I can't take that. So I'm also just gonna go with an Astro. I'm going to say, but more specifically, I love Yordan Alvarez's monster home runs.
Okay. Yeah, I
don't even just want the player. I just want the monster home runs, because they're so fun to watch.
Yeah. There's especially because it's not like he's like one of those guys that has like a super violent swing. It's all so smooth.
Yes.
And then you blink an eye and it's 450 feet away. So I'm coming down to my last two picks here.
Last pick.
Okay, so
this
is what I would need a clarification on. I fully intended to pick being forced as a Houstonian, as a Texans fan, being forced to watch the Cowboys every year.
I'm going to allow
because
this
because you pick bad football teams. Can I still pick Cowboys?
Yes, because oftentimes the Cowboys are not a bad football team.
Right.
When they're on. I mean, how often
they're
are the Cowboys?
They're not bad until January.
Like, when's the last
time? When Dez doesn't catch it.
Yeah, like, when's the last time the Cowboys had a top five pick? We watched
God,
the,
like, I that's. Can't. Well, I guess Zeke, right?
I guess, yeah. So
yeah,
it's been
Zeke,
quite a
maybe.
While. So I think that's where, like, there's a difference. I think it's like you put these awful teams on television. Honestly, I think they should do what they do on Thanksgiving, like, with the flexing of games. They should choose their Thanksgiving matchups.
Well, that's like why they added that night game, so they could actually dictate at least one good matchup. Yeah. And this year we get 49ers Seahawks. That should be pretty good.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, the 49ers
might be Drew Lock.
Yeah, they're
Drew Lock versus Brock Purdy. The matchup of the century on Thanksgiving night could be right in front of us. All right, that does it for us on the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I'm Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. I'll be out tomorrow. So I'll be back with the Bees on Monday and back with the bullpen then, because we were off Thursday and Friday as a station. So I will talk to you guys later. We got Glenn Davis and Soccer Matters is up next.